Big Dog Ball Talk, Matt Eichhorn and Jordan Flegel. Loaded show. Been a hot minute. Jordan, it was your happy 48th birthday. Happy birthday again to Jordan. He mentioned 48. It in the last podcast. Happy 48. It's a big super one. Old, way older than me. And because of his birthday bender, midlife crisis potentially, that's what the people are saying.
See how I'm wearing my hat?
Yeah, what would you get?
How would you describe
exactly,
this?
The bangs?
Yeah, I've got bangs now. I've got bangs.
You look like a poor man's Ashton Kutcher.
I'll take that. I will take that. Any resemblance to Ashton, I'll take it. He was nice back in the day, that 70s show. He was nice.
Yes, yes, yes. Two and a Half Men he was on for some reason. Yes. I'm not really sure why. Him and Mila Kunis both had the exact same movie come out, but they were in different movies. In
Friends
one
with
year.
Benefits.
That was interesting.
And
No.
We're a fan of rom-coms on this this podcast.
Yes, big rom-com podcast. Maybe we should do that one-off episode. Just run down our favorite rom-com.
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Love Actually.
We've got a basketball finals playing out. A fictional one between Sacramento and New York, which would be pretty funny. Mm-hmm.
That would be shit.
Nowadays, it'd be shit. Back then, a little better, but.
Did we shun the Kings again?
Oh, yeah, we did. Sorry, apologies.
Who knows? But, Jordan, what did you do for the big day, for the big weekend? What did you get up to? Was it debauchery? Was it crazy? Or was it just mildly tame, full of weird haircuts?
I need a haircut. That's partly the reason why there's bangs sticking out of my Blue Jays hat. Mm-hmm. So no haircuts. You know what? It was pretty tame. It was tame. A lot of catching up on The Last of Us, which I hadn't started the second season until this weekend. So basically binged through those four. I know that doesn't sound like that much fun to people, but hey, it was good for me.
You're old, man.
I'm old. I'm 48.
This is crazy.
Had some really nice pizza. Was it Giresse's? No, but it was the where I live now version of Giresse's. Really, really nice. Some chicken tenders.
Nice.
Went to my favorite restaurant. Oh. This is a separate thing because it stretched it out over a whole weekend. Went to my favorite restaurant, which is great. And then did a bunch of work on the island with the sheep. As the loyal listeners will remember, I partied with the sheep. Got a little crazy. Got a little sunburnt on the back of my neck. But it was beautiful. At least we had good weather. I don't know what it was like down in the Sarnhole, but I was outside most of the time.
Yes, sir.
Got day drunk a little bit. It was very simple. It was fun, but a 48-year-old's dream, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's really all you can ask for at an advanced age like that, to you know, be able to just go outside, party with some barn animals, and you know, feel at one with nature. All those meals sound great. I've decided, breaking news, that I'm going. It's not breaking news for the people that I've been in direct contact with for the last week, because I've probably just inundated them and annoyed the bejesus out of them with it, because I'm nonstop complaining / talking about it since I've started it. But I am losing 30 pounds by August, Jordan. I'm doing it. And I'm tracking 30? All my calories.
Starting when?
30 pounds. I'm going crazy. Last week, man, I'm doing it. I'm going to be shredded all summer long. It's going to be crazy. The only thing I think that I have to give up, though, I thought that if I accounted my calories to include alcohol, then it would be fine. It would balance out. So if I just ate less, so that way that I could still drink my beer, because I can only have like 2,000 calories a day, man. That's a struggle.
So you're
no midnight snacks, no
nothing.
You're
going full tracking to like you've mapped it out. Are you serious? Have you ever tried to do this before? This is crazy.
I only in high school I did the reverse when I could not put on weight and I was eating like 2,800, 3,000 calories
Producer
a
Alex,
day
man.
To gain
you and
weight.
Producer Alex, were just shoving.
Yeah.
In.
Trying to.
That's
love to shove it in, but now I've shoved it in too much, and now I'm trying to prevent myself from shoving it in
me
anymore.
And you are on a years long bulk. The cut is going to be nice, but yours sounds good. Maybe I'll join you, Matt. I'll set my own week goal: 30 pounds in August.
Nice. Week.
Will I be counting calories like that? No, but I'm going to intuitively eat, and we'll see what happens.
Hey, let's go. Biggest Loser, Big Dog Ball Talk edition.
Alex, bring out the scales.
Speaking, yes, please, please do. But speaking of big time losers, this was a wild Mother's Day weekend. Shout out to Esther of Virginia.
Shout them out.
I'm sure they're both
and
listening right
Christo.
Now. And Christo. Yes,
the forgotten
McGee,
mother
the best of them all
of this podcast.
Yes.
Never forgotten in my heart. Whatever.
The big dog ball tug monkey was conceived in captivity, so it doesn't really have.
Yeah, we don't know.
Technically.
We don't know where she is.
Tragic story. Yeah.
Harambe, I think, was.
Speaking of losers.
Sorry, Matt.
Yes. I think so. I think that makes sense. That's good lore. I like that. He's going to come back and get revenge on my kid. Shit. I'm sure he's listening.
Jesus Christ.
That was in the Cincinnati Zoo. They don't have an NBA team. Yeah. So until they do, the big dog ball talk monkey will have to wait and unsheath vengeance another day. But biggest losers of the weekend, easily the Cleveland Cavaliers, as they are now down 3-1 in the series. Obviously, great comeback story there in game three. A solid performance, kind of showing what we kind of expected, because when we left off last week on our last podcast, they were staring down the barrel of that 2-0 deficit. No Darius Garland, looked like the sky was falling a little bit, and they bounced back. 22-point dub. That was great. Great way to kick off the weekend. And then it just all falls apart at an even worse rate, in game four here, where they are fully healthy. Everybody's out there. DeAndre Hunter's there. Evan Mobley's there. Darius Garland's there. And somehow they just can't put anything together. I mean, this was just every weakness for this Cavs team that we've talked about was just really put on full display. The lack of really like offensive versatility outside of Donovan Mitchell, the lack of offensive intensity and pride that comes out of Evan Mobley as a reliable bucket getter. And then even just, the defensive ability of this team in the playoffs, something that, we said we can't really believe in this squad until they can prove it. And once again, it kind of seems like here we are, a great regular season team, but like we said all year long, we'll see if it sticks in the playoffs. And the Pacers, a team that went deep in the playoffs in the East last year, as fluky as people want to put it, they just put the belt to the ass in this one. And Tyrese Halliburton didn't even have to have a good game. It was just all the supporting cast around him, too deep, too fast, too athletic, and the Pacers are now one game away from back-to-back years making the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, pretty crazy. I mean, I forget who pointed it out in the podcast, but we could have three of the four same conference finalists last year, this year that we had last year, if the Celtics are able to turn it around, which, they had a strong game three, looks like that's a possibility, and then the Timberwolves out east, if they can finish off their out west, if they can finish off the Warriors. It's like, I'm not surprised that the Pacers came back and, really wanted to make a statement in this game four, because they got beat down on their home court by the Cavs. The Cavs really took control of that one, as they should have as well, sort of responding to going down 0-2. But I didn't think it would be this much of a blowout, like right early on, like right by halftime. This game was pretty much over. Like, I thought the Cavs would show a little bit more fight with all of their guys back, in the lineup finally. I know they're all laboring.
Well, and you know what, Jordan? Now that I'm thinking about it, but we didn't actually talk about it. I think that when we talked about the playoff where we were last was after game one. So we didn't even talk about the
right.
Tyrese Halliburton insane,
crazy
finish there to come back. 9 points in like 30 seconds, very Reggie Miller-esque. So this is, again, another series where the Pacers are just a clutch team, maybe the most clutch team in the NBA.
Yeah, no, they've been so clutch. And I've been thinking about how sort of ironic it is, but then not really, if you think about it, that last year they lost a bunch of close games to that Celtics. Again, that was in that Celtics series, that was probably the main reason it was a sweep, because in crunch time, the Celtics just out-executed the Pacers time and time again. It seems like that's kind of battle-hearted them now against the Cavs. Like, you feel way better. I mean, it was really only that game two that was a clutch time game in this series so far. But just overall, I feel better about Indiana in clutch situations because they've been there. They've got guys who have been there. Like, they sneakily have, some like we talked about going into this series, some experience on this team. Like, you're not really going to rattle Pascal Siakam. Like, I know Pascal has bad games here and there, and he's somewhat inconsistent, and he's never going to be like every game 25 plus points, like incredible, but like I think that's just kind of who he is. I don't think it's really he's shaking in his boots looking at this Cavs team. And that was the other thing going into it, like I did not think that Indiana was intimidated by the 64 win Cavs team at all. If anything, they I think they feel like they're better than them, and that's been borne out here for through these four games. So the Cavs kind of had that working against them, in that I think this was a closer series sort of talent wise than it was made out to be if you're just looking at these teams' records, which again is why I picked the Cavs. I mean, for the record, I still picked the Cavs to win this series going into it, but that's why I said it would take them seven games. I didn't think they'd fall apart to this extent. You obviously have to look at injuries. That's probably the main thing. Again, we always sort of over-examine and over-complicate these things a lot of the time, where like if they had a fully mm-hmm. healthy complement in game two, that series would have been, I'm sure, tied 1-1 going back to Indiana and would be 2-2 right now. So, injuries are obviously the main thing, but the whole point of the Cavs all year was that they had this depth and this great roster of guys. You know, you could go basically 10 deep that Kenny Atkinson could pull from. And that's where guys like you and I, a lot of people watching it, were like, hold on a second. Their depth is a little bit, as you would say, Matt, fugazi, especially in a playoff context. Mm-hmm. Ty Jerome? Really? This is the Ty Jerome we're getting after the great regular season that he had? I thought there'd be a bit of a drop off, going into the playoffs. I didn't see this coming. And I think I specifically remember when we previewed this series saying, like, even if Garland is out, I kind of trust Ty Jerome to come in and be that secondary ball handler next to Donovan Mitchell. Yeah. He's been awful. He hasn't had a single good game, basically, in this series. Pretty useless again in game four.
Game one, I mean, he had 21 and 8, but he still shot 8 for 20.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, he's not the worst guy out there on the court, but through the regular season, he was like in now, the
since then, man. He's been horrible.
Yeah, and so, yeah, yeah. And he's had some flat out bad games. And he was the one who got burned on that Tyrese Haliburton game winner, too. Like, he's the one who was trying to stick with him. Provided basically, a pretty weak contest there on that one. It was a great shot. But, he's one guy who's just, not been to the level you need him to be if you're talking about this great Cavs depth and a next man up mentality and all this stuff. Like, the other thing, too, Jared Allen, I think he's had a really weak series. Like, I think he's just not been great. He just hasn't contributed.
Two rebounds in game four?
Awful in game four, but I can't think of a single good game or a good moment this entire series that he's put together. Like,
Big dog of the year. He's putting a bad stink on this war.
I know. But, like, again, they got to turn down the lights in those arenas. He can't see. He's squinting once again. But you can say it's about the injuries and that you're obviously right if you make that argument. But again, the great teams, the 60 plus win teams are supposed to be great because of this depth. The bigger story here is the depth has not come through. The guys that they've relied on all regular season have not come through. And that was the worry with this team is that they're really good. Best offense in the NBA. It looks really good during the regular season, especially in the doldrums in fucking, early February, when everyone's just crawling their way to the to the All-Star break, like it's easy to beat the bad teams and run up the win total. And I know they beat good teams too. Like they were a legitimately great team all through the year, but when it comes down to it in the playoffs, after Donovan Mitchell, you don't really have that many guys who you can say they've been there before. They know the grind. They're going to step up. And even like they're guys who are supposed to be more of the veteran presence on this team. Like a guy like Max Strus, like he's good for stretches, but you can't really rely on him to carry you for a game when other guys are missing. And they've just got too many guys like that. Like DeAndre Hunter, again, he was a great addition. I know he's battling through injuries. Everyone really liked that trade, us included.
Mm-hmm.
He's not really like a playoff dog like that. He's never shown that. So there's too many guys who sort of play on the edge of a knife when you're talking about like how good they're going to be in the real the pressure cooker, and just all of their guys have fallen to the bad side. There's no one who has stepped up and you can point to and say, oh, they're really doing it. Unlike the guys on the Pacers, like Andrew Nembhard's not mm-hmm. like some crazy world beater during the regular season. He's kind of had a run of the mill season, nothing crazy. When it gets into the playoffs, and this is going back to last year, he elevates to a whole new level. I think Miles Turner has also elevated mm-hmm. this series. They've Neesmith has probably been the biggest elevator for the Pacers. Like Jesus Christ, he's been
Obi Toppin off the bench has been great.
This is like these are the margins. It's like Indiana also a pretty deep team with guys who are you can maybe say aren't they're sort of underneath that all-star tier of player, and it's like they've all stepped up. All the guys on the Cavs, separate from the injury concerns, just haven't. So, it's why it's 3-1 and the Cavs, like they are going home. So I give them a, a decent chance here to win game five, but then, you know, game six going back to Indiana. I don't see this Cavs team after the performance they've put through these four games, turning this thing around and becoming one of the few teams this deep in the playoffs to reverse a 3-1 deficit. I just don't see it happening. You know, you got to go back to game two though, too, because they threw that shit away. They literally, I think it was, might've been, or no, I was going to say it's Ty Jerome who inbounded it. I think it was Max Strus who inbounded it when Nembhard literally took it out of the air and they go down. Tyrese goes to the foul line, misses it, and, you know, hits that big shot. But they got to be, you know, kicking themselves for that too, because that was the injury concerns, like playing without the guys, nobody stepping up, as I just said, and then just terrible execution down the stretch. Like everything that could have gone wrong has gone wrong for these Cavs. So, you know, I feel for them. But the Pacers have really taken that by the balls, and they deserve to be up, you know, at the end of the day, despite all those injuries that the Cavs are dealing with.
Yeah. Well, this one is also going to be interesting. You know, Darius Garland coming out and saying that, you know, the Cavs, not his Cavs team, but a Cavs team once came back down 3-1. Not sure if anyone remembers that. When was that? Which, you know, good mentality to have. It is possible to come back down 3-1. And, you know, I still think that the Cavs have the potential to do that. Like, this Pacers team can be like such a hot and cold one. True. Like, again, this game four really wasn't behind like their top players. Like, Siakam had a solid game. Like we said, Miles Turner was solid, but like really the driving force on this team will always be Tyrese Haliburton. And he had a pretty weak showing, but it didn't matter because, you know, the rest of the team stepped up and elevated their games. So when I look at this one, yeah, I think the Cavs have a chance to come back down 3-1 and make this a series, but the caveat of this whole thing is that they need Donovan Mitchell because he is by far and away their most important player, one of the best playoff performers we've seen, you know, of his generation. And he's a game time decision now with an ankle injury.
He's also injured.
Coming into game five. Even if he does play, we don't know what extent that's going to be, what that's going to look like, if it's going to re-aggravate. Like, if with Donovan Mitchell, even not at 100%, you know, if he plays at 70%, I think that maybe this is a done deal. It's a wrap up and we just have to take the L on these predictions because like we said, the Cavs and the Pacers are a very, very similarly built teams, play a similar style. But I think that, you know, with the Pacers just being healthier, looking a little more hungry, they're, you know, the Pacers have the Cavs right up along the ropes. Like, I just feel at this point, they're just one big haymaker away from knocking them out of the playoffs and making this a done deal. And Donovan Mitchell not being able to suit up or being able to play at the, you know, to the best of his abilities. Like, the guy had to chip in 40 points for you to, you know, even win one game. If he's not able to do that, I think they're almost dead to rights at this point.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's the other thing too. It's that, like, this beautiful Cavs offense, again, partly because of the injuries, this is what's driven this, but it's kind of gone out the window. Like, it's a lot of just Donovan Mitchell putting this fucking team on his back, going to the rack again and again and again, you know, high pick and roll. Like, that's what sort of is required at this point, this deep in the playoffs, you know, from him. But it's not just because of the injuries though, too. You look around, you need, I don't want to make the comparison to the fucking 2015 Hawks who, you know, people forget they did get, if I'm not mistaken, I think this was the Eastern Conference Finals. They got swept by the Cavs that year. I think they made it through a couple rounds. But like that Hawks team that won 60 games or whatever, it was a similar thing where in the regular season, their offense really looked unstoppable. But when you go down the line of like, who's going to take it themselves and get a shot for you and go and make something happen in a tight half court situation, like who am I going with on the Cavs other than Donovan Mitchell? Like, it's pretty obvious. Like it's pretty much no one. If Garland is compromised, which clearly he still is, like he's not going to be 100% for any of this series. That's all you've got to go with. And that was the worry as well. It's like when it gets down to it and you're playing mano a mano shit in the playoffs and you're just comparing, you know, how well your guy can do in an ISO situation versus my guy, the Cavs aren't really set up for that. You know, I think they're a guy or two short, like a veteran guy like that who can go get their own shot short of sort of being able to compete in that way against this Pacers team. So Donovan Mitchell now dealing with an ankle, 100%. If he's not out there ready to go and playing at his highest level, they have even less of a chance to turn this thing around, because it's not as if they're getting great contributions from the team offense as a whole. Like, everything has completely slowed down. I think you got to give the Pacers credit defensively. You know, in these three games that they've won, they've been able to lock in, make big defensive plays when they needed to. And I think they've just been more impressive on that side than Cleveland has. That's going to be the series. If Donovan Mitchell can't continue to be Superman, the Cavs haven't shown that they have some sort of lever other than that. And if he's compromised, yeah, don't like trust everyone
Garland
else,
or Mobley or Allen, they got nothing.
No, that's the thing. Like, as one-on-one players, as guys who have to take that initiative themselves to go and make something happen, that's just not their strength. If Donovan Mitchell is hobbled at all, to me, there's no chance. He's going to have to come out and have more, I would say, like 35 plus points in each of these fucking games if they have a chance to win here. Just based on everything we see, because again, you're not going to get that situation that you get in the regular season where the Cavs, they're at home and they just get the defense in rotation, they get out and run, and they spray it around and hit a bunch of threes. Like, that's not happening in the playoffs, and that's the thing. Mm-hmm, it's slowed down to a slog, a grind of a half court game, they just don't have the horses to make that happen. So Donovan Mitchell better, if the Cavs want to win even one more game in this one, he better come back, because if he's out, like, I don't think they're winning that game five. I think that's the series right there.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep a close eye on that series, and, you know, potentially we'll be talking about the Pacers moving on and the Cavs being put out
crazy
when we record next. But to move on and talk about the other game that went on Sunday, I'm putting the tag on it, man. This is an ass series.
So
this has
bad.
Been shit. It's not even, so we're talking about the Thunder and the Nuggets. I gotta say, like, yes, like, there is, you know, times when there are low scoring series and low scoring games, and the games are exciting still because it's good defense.
Yep.
This hasn't been good defense. It's been just shit offense. Yep. Which is so weird of all the two teams in the second round for me to think that this is what was going to happen. Like, this was the last series I thought it was going to be. It's 2-2. So they've got a chance to, make this a little bit more user-friendly to watch. But my God, Jordan, the Thunder take the narrow win here, 92-87, on the road in the Mile High City against Denver. And this has just been pretty much the defenses of every other team / the stars of both teams not really coming out for this one. SGA had 25-6-6, which is, you know, a solid stat line, but when you need 9 of those points in the free throw line and you shoot 8-for-19, it's not as pretty. Yep. Jalen Williams, 10 points on 2-for-13 shooting. By God, that's horrible. And he had a great game 3, yep. So I was kind of shocked to see him play as badly as he did in game 4. And then on the other side, you've got Jokic, who, again, 27-13. That looks great on paper, but 7-for-22 from the floor. Like, he has looked like shit too offensively. Like, he has not been himself. 42 minutes to do it. Russell Westbrook shooting concert dates again, 2-for-12. Like, this is just a very scrappy, like, every possession counts type of series. Like, the Nuggets versus the Clippers was kind of like that when they had some of those good early matchups.
Yep.
Where the defense of both teams were really clicking. There was good offense, better defense at times. That was a good series. This is just bad offense versus, you know, okay defense.
Yep.
So I think this one somehow is actually still very much up for grabs when you kind of look at it as a whole. But with, you know, the lack of production from the big two from each team, with Jalen Williams and SGA on one side, scoring the rock wise, and then Jokic and Murray on the other, like, it's just going to come down to whose supporting cast can play better. And in game 4, I mean, the Thunder's depth was really put on full display, off the bench. Like, Caruso, 10 points. Cason Walls, 11 points. And Aaron Wiggins, 11 points were huge.
Yep.
That won them
yep.
the game. Without that depth off the bench, the Thunder are looking down the barrel of a 3-1 deficit of their own. So they're going back to OKC, and, you know, I'm sure they're going to be amped up and motivated to get this win. But, like, right now, man, like, I was very confident the Thunder were going to win this. I knew it was going to be a little closer than a lot of people thought, coming into the series. But I can't say that I'm super confident about them winning the series as a whole. Like, I could see this going to 7 at this point and it just being a slog to get there, because neither team has really shown to me that they've figured out how to beat their opponent. It's kind of like both sides are just going through the feeling out process still, and we're four games in.
Yeah, 100%. I feel the same way. That's partly why I picked Denver. Similar to the Cavs series, I did pick the favored team, but in seven, I went for this one as well because, I thought Denver, like with Jokic leading the charge, I thought they could sort of sneak out a few wins and then have one maybe on the back of one just incredible all time Jokic performance. We still haven't got that game. I think you can probably bet that game is coming. This is very, very, very uncharacteristic of Jokic to be this inefficient. He's usually one of the most efficient guys in the playoffs, like every year that he's in there. Like shooting 7 for 22 is like, it kind of baffles me because also so many of his shots, that he takes are, right around the basket, kind of bunnies. Like the Thunder have done a really good job at limiting him, like maybe the best that we've seen from like a playoff defense, stopping him from scoring. They've been really, really physical with him, trying to push him off his spots.
Well, we did say, like Chet and Hartenstein, that's two of the toughest guys to deal with down low. And defensively, they've both been doing really well. Yes. I mean, offensively, I can't really say the same, but defensively, those two have been playing with
And that's what saved the Thunder in this series in general is the defense. Like that's what they stifled. They actually, when they destroyed the Nuggets in game two, that was just absolute stifling classic Thunder defense. And, the Nuggets probably came into that game too, maybe not giving it their all. They stole that one on the Gordon buzzer beater in game one, and we're probably just looking forward to get back to Denver. But still, like the Thunder, the defense has been what has sort of held up. But again, this is not that surprising. It's kind of like a Cavs situation where these two teams are very similar at the top of their respective conferences, doing really, really just running up the wins, doing great in the regular season. But then it's like, when it gets down to that slog of playoff offense, who's showing up for you? Because again, Jalen Williams, I mean, he's like a better version of what's his name on the Rockets who would have eight points, Jalen Green. He's doing a better version of that. Sort of having a great game one game and then a terrible one the next. Like he's still a young guy and he clearly hasn't put together the sort of consistency part. You knew that.
It's tough to think that this team's going to win a title with him as their second leading scorer.
That's
it is
the thing.
Tough.
You're thinking about it, and it's like Chet, he's sort of the him and Jalen Williams are kind of like the 2A, 2B, that looks great on paper, but both of those guys still are really young. They haven't been through the battles in the playoffs. Even SGA hasn't really been through that many playoff tests. Like it's only been a couple years here. So this is still a really young team.
Seven game series, but his second year and his rookie year, they played the Warriors 2019. But they went to seven in both those, but they were both first round losses. And then otherwise, last year's kind of burnout, no conference finals. Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. So like this was always a really young team. But again, you want to give a team that won 68 games the respect. And that's why, I mean, I'm with you. I hesitate to make any predictions at this point when it's 2-2, but that's why I picked them to win the series. But this isn't that surprising to me that you're having up and down performances from Jalen Williams, from Chet. It's also not surprising to me, and I know it won't be to you, that Lu Dort basically didn't play the entire fourth quarter because he was 2 for 10 and couldn't hit anything. It's just awful. And
I've been calling for that, man. Like, they gotta make a trade.
You can look at him again during the regular season and stretches potentially in the playoffs as well, where it's like, oh, he's hitting everything. He's still gonna Lu Dort. At some point, he's still going to turn into a guy who the other team just does not need to guard, which is what Denver was doing in this entire game when he was on the court. So like, offensively, there's still those questions with OKC. And then Denver, you have the whole other type of problem, which is that they only have fucking six guys. Like, I don't know how much more energy these guys have. I mean, clearly that's part of the reason why Jokic is shooting so terribly. It's partly the Thunder defense, but also he's playing heavy minutes every single night. Like when he sits down, the Nuggets essentially fall apart. Like if David Adaman was up to him, he would obviously be out there all the time. And it's just a lot to put on a guy. And frankly, the rest of the four starters, like you're really only playing Russ off the bench. You're getting these few minutes from Peyton Watson, who is god awful. Julian Strother, I do think at this point, you maybe have to play him more just for the sake of getting the guys
4 minutes rest. Like, pretty much isn't even exactly anything. It's like you're out there, you fart and you come back in.
Exactly. So there's just like the Thunder have the depth, but not the experience, not the offensive firepower that they need to make me feel confident that they can win, two of these next potentially three games. The Nuggets, it's just their gas tank is on empty. It's like probably past the empty line. Yeah. And it's like, fuck, how far can we drive this thing before, it starts to sputter? I mean, you might already start be hearing the sputter, but I don't know. Maybe they have another fucking 50 kilometers and, Jamal Murray's going to put together another vintage game here. That's the thing. Like, the mm-hmm, Nuggets mm-hmm. have these sort of,
he's coming up behind with the jerry can.
Exactly. It's like Speed, where have you seen Speed, that Sandra Bullock Keanu Reeves movie? Matt, it's classic.
Not
you
familiar.
Like,
love Sandy
the terrorist takes over the bus and she has to drive the bus at 50 miles an hour. If it drops below, the whole bus explodes, so they gotta refuel. It's crazy. Yes. Crazy film. But it's just the Nuggets. I'm with you that I'm kind of baffled. Like, I don't want to make any predictions at this point because I really don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how much Jokic and these guys can summon, and I don't know how. I need a close in a cam on the sphincters of the OKC. Like, how tight are they right now? Like, are they nervous? Like, I know SGA was kind of laughing after they went down 2-1. Like he knew something other people didn't. But I think that was a bit of showmanship, aura farming, I think is what they call it. But I just don't know how ready the Thunder are to these young guys to really bounce back. And is going home going to help them, or is that going to be a lot of pressure in this game five to win? Because if you lose that game, you know that Denver can come back and finish you off. Because also, this game was in the balance. Like you said, the Thunder were pretty close to being down 3-1 if they don't get those bench contributions. And if Jokic just has a bit better of a game shooting it, or even Jamal Murray also didn't have a great game. Like, they're playing with fire here, and I wonder how nervous those guys are getting. So this is a very, very weird, like almost like polar opposite, these two teams. And I just don't know what's going to win out. It's, it's like a freaking immovable object and an unstoppable force type of thing. I don't know what the hell is going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I'm not making any predictions. I'm just going to sit back and see what the fuck goes on. But this has been a weird series. I agree. It's been sort of borderline unwatchable. A lot of these games, especially the fucking first quarter and this one last night.
I tuned in a little late actually.
It was like 14-7 or something.
It was halfway through the second quarter, and I think the Nuggets had 20 points. And I was like, what the crazy. Fuck? Like, I was like, I had to do a double take. I was like, am I is this wrong? Like, the graphics department need to go take a look at this? No, it was actually halfway through the second quarter, and they had 25 points. Like, it was nuts.
Yeah, unbelievable. But so, I'm staying out of this one. If I mean, I don't know if you're putting bets on this series at all, Matt, but I'd fucking stay away. We will see. Cause like the other thing,
game five will tell us a lot.
It will 100%. It will, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is just like a, Thunder win game five, Nuggets win game six back at home. And then it's a fucking free for all. Like, maybe they'll probably reach 70 points like midway through the fourth, if it goes to game seven. It's just, like my thought potentially is that the Thunder, they clearly have their sights set on the finals. That, they're a 68 win team. They know what their sort of ultimate goal is. Whereas the Nuggets, like, if you make it out of this round, you're playing the Wolves again. Like, Jesus Christ, like, how much energy do you have behind this? Like, or sort of after this run, like, so that might come into it as well. But this one's been a pretty weird one for sure.
Well, you mentioned it there, Jordan, so let's talk about it. Timberwolves, Warriors. Timberwolves now up 2-1 in the series after bouncing back after that game one loss. But the biggest story, obviously, I of this whole series really is, Steph Curry out. Projected going to be, potentially back in the lineup. Game six is what they're hopeful for. But we might not even get there depending on how, games four and five play out here. I got to say, though, Jordan, like, when I heard Curry was out and, they dropped game one, I was kind of like, hey, well, you know what? This was just the Timberwolves are going to Timberwolves. Yes. They do this shit sometimes. So they just don't get up for it. And they don't rally the way they should. And that was whatever. They bounced back game two, blow the doors off them at home. Like, that's how it should go. And then, game three, you're in hostile territory. But this game should not have been this close. Like, there were times down the stretch, fourth quarter, where the Warriors were winning this game, and you know they're relying on Buddy Hield in 2025 to give you a bulk of points. Jonathan Kuminga had 30 points. The guy's barely been touching the court in the second half of the season, and finally now he's looking like he's trying to earn that max deal in the offseason he was hoping to get at the beginning of this year. Probably not going to happen, but this might not hurt. At least building that potential argument. But this is a team that now it's like Jimmy Butler has to carry everything. Like Draymond will chip in, obviously defensively. He's still probably their best playmaker even when Curry is on the court. You've got two cogs you can somewhat rely on. Obviously Draymond, you never know what points wise he can contribute. Whether he's going to pop off for a whole whopping 9 points or he's going to hover more around two or three. But like outside of that, you have no reliable scoring or anything. Like, the Timberwolves really should have blown the doors off him in this one, but Julius Randle has looked rock solid, triple double in this one. Anthony Edwards, 36 points, like just an absolute bucket getter. The supporting cast definitely could step it up a little bit to help the Timberwolves, but as it stands, they are still in a very good spot. They're in the driver's seat heading into as we're recording this Monday night's matchup here in the Bay. If the Timberwolves are able to get this 3-1 advantage, I think that game five, they're going to come out swinging to end this, because you do not want to go back to Golden State with Curry back in the lineup, because that place is going to be rocking. Curry's going to be motivated. And it's going to be trouble trying to play this team in a 7-game series if it goes long. But they really do have the potential to end this quickly, which is, even with Curry in, I kind of thought they had the potential to do. But
me too.
I don't know. This Warriors team is uglying it up enough and being tough enough physically that they are wearing down on the Timberwolves. They're making them earn these stripes.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. I was surprised that game three was as close as it was. Like, even Anthony Edwards, he had a great game sort of by the end of it, 36 points. But he was a -4 because he was so fucking awful in the first half. Like, he really only put it together more so towards the end of this game. They get just enough.
Similar thing happened in game one too. He hit a couple threes early on in the fourth quarter, but was like a negative player, like not just box score, just like in general, was not an asset to them in that game one.
Yeah, for sure. And it's like, I can't help but think because of that if Steph Curry was in the lineup still, that like the Warriors would potentially like be in the driver's seat and probably win this series.
Agreed.
You and I both, I think, picked Wolves in six in this one, because again, I thought they were fucking over this. Like, they didn't really have any of these moments in the Lakers series where it's like, oh, Wolves are gonna wolf. No. They're gonna do their, but like, they played really well, really tight, so I thought they had kind of turned a corner. But these, specifically game one and big parts of game three is how I expected them to maybe look a few times in the Lakers series, which is why I picked them. But they saved all of this bullshit now for Golden State for some reason. because of that, game three showing, I wouldn't be surprised if this is 2-2 going back. Like, if Jimmy Butler just, puts them on his back again, you get a better game from Pajemski. Maybe Kuminga pops off again. Who knows? And you get just enough. Like, but again, that's what we both said and agreed on. If the fucking Warriors were gonna win this series, it was gonna be because the motherfucking Wolves took their foot off the gas or let them do it. Like, they've just looked too shaky for me. Like, they still have time to turn it around. They still are up 2-1. If they win this game four, again, should be decisively. If Steph Curry's not in the lineup, you should beat this fucking team decisively. You have home court advantage.
You have one guy to play defense on. Literally one guy. Everyone else, just let him go.
And it should be that simple. And so if they're able to do that and come back, I 100% give them a great chance to close this out in five. But, if they fuck around again and Anthony Edwards is kind of passive and they just are can't hit the fucking broadside of a barn, shooting the ball, which has happened way too often for this team that was a really, really good 3-point shooting team during the regular season. Like, and they still generate relatively open looks, but they just go through these stretches where they just fucking miss everything. Happened in the Lakers series again, even the game they won to clinch that series, they missed like an abominable amount of fucking 3-point shots. So there's still that factor that the Wolves are going to shit the bed. But again, I'm at the point where like, they shouldn't. If they lose this, it's fucking fully their fault. The Warriors, all year, when they haven't had Steph Curry, I know they have Jimmy Butler now, but Jimmy Butler's also fucking 36 years old. Like, you have some of the best perimeter defenders in the league. You should not be struggling with this team. And it's a little disheartening that
they
are.
Even with Steph in the lineup, yes, they should be beating them. Like, it's just nuts.
Yep.
So I'm maybe we'll chalk up game three to them being on the road. You know, the crowd at the Chase Center maybe was getting a little loud. But yeah, game four has to be a statement made. They could essentially win the series with a game with a game four win, because I think that the spirit of this Warriors team will be broken heading into game five on the road if they're down
100%. And conversely, if it's 2-2, if the Warriors fucking pull out a close win, I wouldn't expect the Wolves to, from that point, like, depending on how Steph is coming back, like, because, you know, they say he can come back for game six, but that might be pushed back. He might not be able to go that day. Like, he's a guy who's had ankle issues in the past. And
his whole career.
So, you know, I know this is a hamstring, but, you know, he's had lower body things, or I think it's a hamstring, right? Is that what he's dealing with? But
yeah, let's chalk it up. Hockey talk.
Lower body exactly. Hold on. The hamstring, because the hamstring, like, you can't play around with that. Like, that you got to make sure is fully healed. Cause that's so fucking tender and so easy to re-aggravate. So, all that aside, though, like, if the fucking Wolves know that they had the chance to win two games in San Francisco with Steph out of the lineup, and they don't do it, and they let this go back then to fucking the Chase Center with potentially, the Golden State fucking hero coming back and saving them once again, like, you just don't want to be part of that story if you're the Wolves. So you guys better fucking win here in game four. You have all the ability to do it. I think it's as simple as that. Like, I don't really think the Warriors have any other crazy shit that they can pull other than, like you said, just mucking it up, just being the sort of more, team to get under the Timberwolves' skin, sort of throw different, defenses at Ant and their playmakers. There's nothing materially that they can do that would make me think, oh, they can, sort of in a fair and square fight where both teams, you know, shoot what's expected, that they can win a game here. So right from the start, it's been the case. Timberwolves, it's up to them whether they want to take this series by the throat, take a commanding lead or not. I don't know if I trust them to do it. We'll see.
Well, we'll keep a close eye on that evening game. But before that one tips off, let's talk about the last series here to recap here, Jordan. It's the Boston Celtics, New York Knicks. Knicks still up 2-1. Obviously, that 2-0 start that they got out to was crazy. Insane. Couldn't believe that that they were able to pull this off the way they had. But the Celtics really coming back and shutting up the Mecca in Game 3. But I'm not gonna lie to you, man. I'm still pretty worried about this series for the Celtics, at least. I mean, to be fair, I also don't really like either of these teams. I find with both of them losing more the Celtics than the Knicks. But I will never, ever fully be able to support, no matter how much the modern NBA grows into this, I'll never be able to fully support the team that lives and dies by the three ball, because that has been the reason why they lost games 1 and 2. And again, at the buzzer, at the skin of their teeth, like, even at their worst, the Celtics were barely losing to the Knicks. And then this one, they shoot 50% from three. They hit 23 pointers to the Knicks 5. And that's kind of just the way this Celtics team has been dominant for the last 2, 3, 4 seasons. So the more I watch it, the more I see them kind of implement their game plan, this still should be the Celtics series to win. But then you kind of, you're looking at it like, the Knicks have all the personnel needed to beat the Celtics at this point. Like, if you're in your home crowd, like, they should be able to get up 3-1. Like, this really, I think, should be a toss-up. I just think, you have a couple guys that you need to isolate and find a way to maximize them more offensively. Like, I think that maybe the Knicks, again, kind of like we saw last year, are getting a little tired as well. Like, Karl-Anthony Towns has been okay, but he has not been nearly as efficient as he was. Josh Hart, same thing. I think that, even OG had a horrible showing there in game three. I just think that some of these guys are it's these heavy minutes they played all season long are starting to wear on them a little bit. The Celtics are, well rested for the most part, other than Kristaps Porzingis' spotty immune system that never seems to be functioning correctly. And then we have Al Horford starting in the playoffs in 2025, crazy, like insanity. But playing well, I got to give him credit. We're here with, the Celtics still in a good position. I still think they're going to win this series, but I think the Knicks have the potential to shut them down. We've seen it. We know what they need to do. But really it's going to be, the mixture of continuing to play well on the perimeter, matching up size-wise that way, and then also, you know, just finding guys that can step up. Because, you know, Brunson, he can give you that 25, 27-point outing anytime. Kat, you know, he's going to be hovering around the 20-point line. But, like, Mikal Bridges, OG, Josh Hart, one of you guys has to be a lot closer to 20 than you are to 10. So I'm not sure either of those three guys really have what it takes to step up against a Celtics team. It's as, you know, fortuitous as they are defensively. I think this might be through four games. I'm going to call it right now. I think it's going to be a hobo series. I think we're going to see only road men win. Then we go back to Boston and on Wednesday, and things could get dicey.
Yeah, yeah. So you think it's going 2-2 back? You think Celtics? Yep.
I think it's going to go 2-2. I'm going Celtics here. You guys will probably be listening to this after this game. So if I'm wrong,
the Bing Bong crowd is going to kill you, man. But, if you ever go down there. The thing is, like, when I saw it was a 3:30 game on Sunday here, that game three, everyone knew, everyone was talking about, oh, this is the biggest game in Knicks history since, like, the 99 finals or, you know, shit like that, and all the celebrities that were going to be there. I had a pretty good feeling that the Celtics were going to come out and dominate in this game. Yes. They weren't going to go down 0-3 to
the Knicks. Were going
to
disappoint fans? I've never heard that
before. Like, they weren't going to go down 0-3. Even if they didn't shoot the ball well from three, like, they were going to find ways to do it. They're too good of a team. Like, the Celtics, we've seen how dominant they've been going back really 3 years now. You know, when they need it, when their backs are against the wall, they come out and do it. So that didn't surprise me. I'm more sort of up in the air about this game four, though, because, like, the Knicks, they got punched in the mouth. Like, you know, they obviously walked away. They stole two games in Boston on very, like, almost identical ends to the game where the Knicks are down big. They come back. Jalen Brunson hits a bunch of shots. The Celtics implode. And then Mikal Bridges makes a game-winning sort of defensive play, which those two first games were amazing. Again, I'm going to root against the Celtics forever. It's in my blood. This game four, like, I think the Knicks are going to come out with a fucking lot of energy, and like people are pointing out too, I think the Garden crowd on a Monday night, that's going to be more kind of rough and tumble. I think people are going to be, you know, it'll be sort of the darker side of New York rather than, you know, out at 3:30 in the sunshine. I think it's going to get really intense in there, and the Knicks
a little grimy.
Yeah, and the Knicks are going to know if they go up 3-1, that's what really puts them in the driver's seat. 2-2, you've fritted away your two home games when you stole the first two on the road. Like, that's going to be, I think, so demoralizing. And then going back into the Garden for game five, I agree. Like, the Celtics, I think they're just going to blow the doors off them again. I think the series completely flips on its head if the Celtics get this one. And I think the Knicks know that. And I think they're going to come out and they're just going to be fucking diving. They're going to get every fucking loose ball, every 50-50 ball. They're going to just, like, you know, Josh Hart, I wouldn't be surprised if he has like 15 fucking offensive rebounds in this one. Like, they're going to be going all out. But, like, I don't know. It still comes down to how well the Celtics are going to shoot and how well they're going to play. Because even, you know, the Knicks, we've seen over the last couple of years, even when they play like that, when they really, really need a game, they got to get lucky and they got to play well themselves overall too. And they've got to impact the other team, you know, play good defense to stop them from having good games. Cause the will alone of this Knicks team isn't going to necessarily get them the win, but that's kind of the wild card for me. Like, if the Celtics come out a little bit on the back foot and if they're not hitting shots, like, I think this could be another fucking dogfight. And I still do trust the Knicks more in clutch situations than the Celtics, at least so far through this series. The first two games, like, it was night and day. The Celtics looked like completely out of sorts. Like, they couldn't get a good shot. They were settling for awful shots. They weren't really moving the ball around. Tatum looked completely out of sorts. Brown did not look like he could, get to the basket like we've seen him before. But for the Knicks, it's pretty simple. Like, the formula, other than playing their fucking hearts out and just, feeding off the Garden crowd and everything, you know, they've got to pound the offensive glass like we know they like to do. Jalen Brunson's got to have a great game. He's got to force the Celtics into, rotations and spots that they don't want to get into. They're going to have to play guys like, you know, make the Cornet minutes tough, the Porzingis minutes tough. Like, if Pritchard is out there, you're going to have to really make him work defensively. Like, all this stuff, we know it. we know what both teams want to do at this point, like to a T. It's just who's going to execute better and get lucky. Like the Celtics, it, like you said off the top, it's going to continue to be very dependent on whether they hit their threes and how many threes they generate. And if the Knicks can stop them from, you know, taking the amount of threes that they want. You know, I wouldn't say game four is a toss up, but I'm thinking like, I still think the Knicks probably, or the Celtics probably win it too, but it's more like 60-40 for me. I could see maybe the Knicks just really having a prideful night here tonight and just saying, we're going to do whatever it takes to win. Because the other thing too, the Knicks haven't played that great so far in the series at all. Offensively, like they have not been great. They were great in clutch situations those first two games, but like you haven't had like an awesome Cat Brunson and then one of the two wing guys games all together. And if you can put that together, the Celtics are clearly beatable. If the Celtics come away from this 2-2 going back, I think, you know, they're going to sort of feel internally that they know what to do in order to win this series. But the other weird thing with them is that for whatever reason, they seem to play better on the road than at home. So like, if the Knicks can somehow get one of these next few wins before the Celtics, get to four and it goes to game seven, then that's going to be very interesting. Like I could see a situation kind of similar to the first few games where the Celtics get out to a big lead in a game seven and the Knicks claw their way back. And then you've got a very interesting final, seven, 8 minutes of play. So, I will say I like the Knicks' chances to win at least one more game. I don't know if they're going to win more than one, but I don't think, like I've heard some people say, that the Celtics are just going to win every game here the rest of the way. I think the Knicks have just enough to get one more, whether that's tonight, whether that's game five, whether that's game six. I'm not ready to say I feel confident that they can go into Boston and win game seven, but you never know. Like that's where things, you know, all bets are off and we see crazy shit happen. I think the Knicks, it's going to be very disheartening. I agree. If the Knicks lose this game four, and now they're sort of back on even ground because the Celtics, we know the challenges that they present. I mean, again, like you said, if the Celtics go cold again, if they just have another night where they can't shoot, it almost doesn't fully even matter what the Knicks do. It's so dependent on that variance. So this is another weird one, I think, to predict. I'm heavily rooting for the Knicks to win this game four and really be in the driver's seat, and then we'll really see what the Celtics have trying to come down 3-1. I certainly don't think anyone expected those first two games to play out the way that they did, and now this series is much more interesting. We'll see. This is a really fun one.
Well, here's my superstitious take, Jordan, and this is why I'm improving my confidence. I'm saying the Celtics 100% are taking game four. 100%, they're taking it. Because I noticed this a little bit earlier, and if the Celtics do take game four, then I'm 100% locked into the superstition. But for everyone else who, you know, maybe is newer to the podcast or unfamiliar with the hockey world, there's also another series going on with a team that is near and dear to a lot of Canadians' hearts, the Toronto Maple Leafs. And the similarities between this Maple Leaf run and the Knicks playoff run are very similar. The Leafs haven't had the Stanley Cup. They haven't hoisted it since 1967. The Knicks haven't hoisted the Larry O'Brien since 1973. So we're talking, 50-year droughts plus for both teams, both historic franchises, two of the, by far and away most popular franchises in their respective sport. Both teams in the first round went six games against a team that was very young and hadn't made the playoffs in a while. Yep. Knicks with the Pistons, Senators for the Leafs, six games right there and then. Then both teams go and play who else but the defending champions of their respective leagues in the second round and get up to 2-0 starts. And then both drop games two and three, or three and four, pardon me. Prediction.
If the
Leafs already lost. That's what I'm saying. But if the Leafs already lost game four to the Panthers, which was a bit of a shit one, the refs kind of took them out of that. But this isn't big dog puck talk, big dog ball talk. I do say that these teams are locked. They are, they're soul sisters right now. And I think that if the Knicks and the Leafs are going to win the cup and the Larry O'Brien together, or they're going to lose it together. Oh, no. So that's where I'm putting this at.
I don't like those odds, then.
So Leafs fans, Knicks fans, you got to – a lot of people say Toronto is the New York of the that's North. True. So that's lock horns. Let's be friends. Let's be together. And the Knicks and Leafs both to end their cursed playoff streaks here, playoff cold streaks.
Honestly,
so that's what I'm linking this to.
Well, for both of those teams, I think both fan bases would just be happy to get to the conference finals. Are you kidding me? They don't need to win, anything. 100%. Just getting out of this.
Neither team hasn't been to the conference finals in like 40 years either. I guess Knicks did in the 90s,
I 100%. Those are interesting parallels. I mean, slightly different because the Leafs do have home ice advantage in their series, but more or less the same. You're right. But I'm going to officially, I mean, this if this wasn't obvious, I mean, everyone knows I'm rooting for the Leafs, but I'm at hard rooting for the Knicks as well. I hope to God they do it. Like, it would be so funny if the Celtics lost to the Knicks in the second round. God, it would be amazing. The Bill Simmons podcast after that, I don't know if he would be man enough to come on mic or if he'd do it like a week after, but it would just be so beautiful to sort of hear that the pang of sadness in his voice, all these fucking Boston sports fans. It would just be wonderful. So please, I'm with the Bing Bong crew. I think they just got to get one more and then, the game seven will be one to go down in the fucking history books. Cause you know, that one's going to be a rock fight as well. This is way more interesting than I thought it would be when I picked Celtics in five, at the outset here. So good for the Knicks for even getting this far. Just a little bit farther, baby. Come on.
Well, we'll see if the Knicks can pull off the bit more of an upset here as we head into the final game of their homestand prior to game five. We'll see if they're up 3-1 or tied 2-2. Give us a follow at Big Dog Ball Talk, Instagram, X, Twitter. No, Twitter and X are the same thing. TikTok for all the youth, Facebook for all the old heads. Let us know.
Email.
Too much social
media. We do have an email.
Email at BigDogBallTalk.
BigDogBallTalk@gmail.com. Send us a query.
Yeah, give us an email. That would actually be there. Yeah, we should start doing a newsletter. Sign up for the Big Dog Ball Talk newsletter.
We should.
It'll just be a bunch of fucking spam. Send it to 10 people. You're cursed. And before we sign off, because it's going to happen in T-minus 20 minutes here.
Oh, here we go.
The NBA Draft Lottery. It's happening. And we're going to spoil it for you right here, right now. Jordan, I've got Tankathon pulled up right here. I'm going to sim the draft lottery.
Come on, Raptors, 7.5%.
Come on, baby. Jordan, tell me who's winning it. Who's got it? Can you see?
Portland.
First overall pick. Portland. Wow, the Trailblazers getting Cooper Flagg, like moving up 9 spots. That's insane. Joe, if you're watching this, I hope you're stoked. Holy, so the Jazz drop to 2. The Bulls jump up 9 spots to 3? To the third seed.
Wow,
the Bulls, that's huge. The Suns get the Rockets get the Suns pick that jumps up 5 spots. They draft at 4. Wizards dropped to 5, hilarious. Hornets dropped to 6,
they deserve that.
Pelicans dropped to 7, they hilarious. The 76ers dropped to 8, but that goes to the Thunder then, which is absolutely deserve crazy. That. Nets dropped to 9, hilarious. Raptors dropped to 10, not funny at all. This is not accurate. This is bullshit. Spurs dropped 3 to 11, Dallas dropped to 12, and then the Hawks pick at 14 goes to the Spurs, and the Kings pick goes to the Hawks at 13.
Could you imagine if this is actually it?
Congratulations to the Trailblazers. That's it. Yes, you're welcome, everybody.
I'm
pissed off, though. If the Raptors pick anywhere less than 7, I'm fucking tweeting.
Same. I'm obviously rooting for the Raptors, to get best position as possible, but I'm rooting...
Sent Masai.
I'm rooting... almost just as much for the Sixers to lose their pick. That's got to fall on the top 6 or they lose that bitch. Oh my God. I hope that Daryl Morey is there. We can zoom on in on his face if that happens. We will see. This is exciting stuff. Who's going to capture the flag? We will know finally.
The Pelicans sent Zion, which I think is hilarious.
You
I
want
feel
bad
like that's
luck?
A horrible
oh
omen.
My God.
Yeah, this is new, nuts. New. But this has been Big Dog Ball Talk. Matt Igor, Jordan Fleal, congratulations to the Portland Trailblazers. And as my good friend Jordan always says.
Shout out the Pope. The Pope kind of stole my thunder. He was anointed or whatever on my fucking birthday, asshole. Everyone's like, oh, the Pope.
Yeah, fucked
Pope.
Up.
You
should have lit some smoke for your birthday.
White smoke. 28. 48. The You pointed this out to me, Matt. I mean, I had kind of seen it, but 100%, I believe this is what's going to push the Knicks over the top. The fucking Pope went to Villanova. I can't believe that's even something that you can say. But, you know, the Villanova Knicks.
He's a big White Sox fan, too, apparently.
Yeah, and I am just
they suck.
Across to the Vatican right now, telepathically. I mean, we can sort of speak through God. Pope, you know, the Pope controls the basketball gods, these mythic things.
Pull
that
some
we
strings.
Pull some strings, get the Knicks a win, for the love of Christ. Sorry, I don't know if I should say that, but please, it would make everyone so much happier if the Celtics lost. You know that to be true. Something in Latin. Matt, say something in Latin. Chant it. There we go. Dum vivimus vivimus.
Latin.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah, there you go. What's that?
Yeah.